when someone is just like posting on Twitter and just being like, dude, I just found something crazy in Hunter Biden's laptop, bro. My God, it's crazy. There's like 1,000 pictures of exploitative material and all this stuff. And like people were saying that on Twitter for years. And I mean, we waited and waited and waited and nothing came of it, okay? But then there's other great stories. What's been happening in Gaza, where you have all these independent journalists or even journalists with Al Jazeera, and they're posting every single time a bomb hits, post it on Instagram, and you can see, like, you can literally see a genocide going on.
Welcome to The Reporter, a student-run podcast about journalism and the media. My guest today is a creative editor at the magazine Soleil, which is a periodical based out of Western Washington University, the same college which Devin attends. Devin is a third-year journalism student, and we talked heavily about his notion of the marketplace of ideas, free speech, and the nature of media competition versus media consumption. We talked about his origins as a young journalist, about his Christian upbringing, and his exposure to liberation ideology. We talked for a while about his first article, unpublished, called The Fortress of Faith, which regards an interview he did with Tom Wallace, a local Whatcom County radio preacher. Devin is also an advocate for wrongly detained Filipino migrants into the U.S., specifically in the Washington area. And that's just something I have a lot of respect for as a Filipino American. Before we get into the episode, a little bit of housekeeping. The nature of the show. It's journalism. We talk about sensitive topics, and in particular, we do talk about the death of Charlie Kirk. Now, if that's something that upsets you, there are timestamps in the show notes in case you wanted to skip that. Additionally, my audio is a bit on the louder side for this show because I recorded in a foreign studio where I did not know how to control the volume. Now, without further ado, let's get into the ad reads. Let's get into the episode. To find all my projects, written, spoken, or shorts, go to ricywriter.com. There, you can find everything about my interviews, articles, links, and short clips. Every follow, rating, and coffee donation tells me just how much you truly enjoyed the show and want to see it improve. No more ads. It's Ricey Writer time.
I do want to talk about your published article, Fortress of Faith. First of all, I want to talk about the guy you interviewed. What was his name again?
Tom Wallace.
Tom Wallace.
If you want to just dive into the story, I can. Or do you have a way you want to leave?
Okay, dive into the story, and I have a couple questions after.
Okay, so when I was 17, I was always like someone that was very online, and I remember going past the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is at the time a very trustworthy anti-hate organization. Unfortunately now, a lot of these organizations like the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center are very pro-Zionist, and they don't really do a lot of anti-Arab sentiment that, you know, Zionists permit. Like, they don't even call stuff like what's happening in Gaza a genocide and everything. At least from, you know, as of like a few months ago, obviously with the UN declaring it a genocide. Regardless. So I go on the Southern Poverty Law Center. They have a hate map on there, and it shows how many hate groups are in the United States that they've identified through their own research. And I clicked on Washington, and there was probably around, like, you know, 30, 40 something hate groups for that year. That would have been around 2022, 2023. And I was like, okay, is there something in Whatcom County? Because I couldn't drive at this point. I had something that, you know, I didn't have a license at this point. And so I was like, all right, I was like low-key bumming off my mom. I was like, I'm gonna need her to drive me somewhere. And I was like, oh, what's this place called, the Fortress of Faith in Bellingham? Let me check this out. So I looked them up and all this stuff. They got this old website, and it's based in the Bellingham Baptist Church in Bellingham in Whatcom County.
So they're very local.
Very local. And the minister was a guy who was like not the main minister of the church, but he would just pop in and out occasionally, and he was traveling a lot of places, and he would do his radio show. It was 15 minutes a day. It was on, at one point, over 200 radio stations in Washington. I don't know what that number looks like now, but at the time of the interview I did with him, it was around 200 radio shows, or 200 radio stations, my apologies. Mm-hmm. And it was 15 minutes of him regurgitating, there's a theory called the Great Replacement Theory. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. The Great Replacement Theory, I'll just explain it for the audience.
Familiarize me.
Yeah, I will familiarize you. Is a theory that there's a un-American group that's coming in, you know, waves in the way of immigration into the United States and trying to change the United States ideology. Now, this changes for a lot of people. Tucker Carlson will tell you, you know, it's Mexicans doing it and they're going to vote Democrat and then Republicans are never going to win the election again. And then Tom Wallace would tell you that it's Muslims that are coming into the country, coming not just into this country, but coming into Europe as refugees at such a high level, and they're installing Sharia law courts and all this stuff, and they're slowly going to turn the world Muslim, and everywhere is going to be like ISIS. Like, that's what he believes. And there's also like a lot of core theology of, like, you know, just general Islamic hate that he promotes, of Islam is like this false religion that is actually something that came out of the revelations of God told us that there was going to be a false idol, a false prophet that compares themselves to Jesus and that tries to, you know, come in and destroy the world. And
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So I was listening to an Immortal Technique song.
Okay.
He said one of the most quoted authors in the Quran was Jesus. I'm just wondering, as someone who studied, is that true?
Yeah, Jesus is mentioned over 300 times in the Quran, and dude, Mary's mentioned hella too. Mary might be mentioned more in the Quran than in the Bible. I don't want to, like, you know, have that as a quote, but yeah, dude.
It's very numerous.
Dude, people forget, man, okay? Like, Muslims love Jesus, bro. Muslims love Jesus. It's literally the only difference is that they don't believe that he was God in the flesh, and they don't believe that he was resurrected. But they still believe that he was a prophet, and they believe after he left that, you know, there was 600 years that passed between that and Islam, and, you know, the Bible got twisted and turned, and it ripped out into different sects of orthodoxy and Catholicism, and eventually God was like, yo, we need to have a new book. I need to make one last book, one last final messenger, and the prophet Muhammad, who, you know, discovered the Islamic faith. That's kind of ridiculous to say that he discovered it, but, you know, when he had the revelations and he went to the cave and he saw Gabriel and all this stuff, that was God kind of giving his last message to someone. I'm not talking about this like this is fact or anything. I'm just telling you the
this is Islamic faith, and this is what Muslims believe.
This is what Quranists believe. Obviously, there's so many sects of Islam, I can't claim that every single one of them believes this. And, like, that was kind of, like, a really layman's basic term of explaining it. But, basically, Muslims believe that there was one more prophet after Jesus. That's basically it. There's one more prophet after Jesus. And a lot of Islamic faith is, like, against, like, idolizing worship, which is what, I'm not saying Christianity promotes that, but Christianity doesn't have necessarily any rules against it that are hard rules. That's why we have, like, Jesus gold statues in Madrid, and the gold is from, like, Mexico, from, like, colonial times when they would, you know, enslave Aztecs and make them mine for the rest of their days. But yeah, anyways, back to Tom Wallace.
Or... yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'd love to hear more about Tom Wallace, because you're already in the thick of it. You know, he has this 15-minute segment every morning that he casts out to hundreds of news stations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I probably listened to about 50 of his segments over the next week. And they're 15 minutes, so I'm, like, consuming, you know.
And like we talked about, it's audio. An audio, it's easier a lot more.
Yeah, they're on Spotify, and they were so easy to consume. Like, you'd save the stuff that wasn't on the radio, because I don't know how to, like, I'm not even going to go on radio to listen to something, I'm going to be honest to you. But yeah, I go on Spotify, I'm checking it out, and I'm looking at the stuff, and I mean, he, like, has episodes about, like, why, you know, Islam is, like, the false faith, and he's talking about, you know, hijabs and the Muslim Brotherhood, which was, like, this non-profit organization that was very involved in the Arab Spring protests, or the Arab Spring revolts in 2011, that did regime change in nations like Egypt and Libya and Syria, and I think maybe Lebanon is also there too, and Algeria is there too. But he believes that this Muslim Brotherhood organization is, like, even connected to people like Ilhan Omar. You're going to see a theme here of the people that he picks in American politics that are, you know, corrupted by the Muslim Brotherhood. So, Ilhan Omar, who's a Muslim from Minnesota, Muslim representative from Minnesota. Barack, Hussein Obama. Make sure to always emphasize Hussein. That's what he always does. Barack Hussein Obama. Who, like, also, he's like a birther, which is a concept of you believe that Barack Obama was not born in the United States of America, which is, you know, that goes all the way back to 2008. And even John McCain denounced to those people that there's a famous clip of John McCain denouncing, like, come on, he wasn't born in Kenya. Like, let's use our brains here. But there's also, I mean, everyone that he accuses is like a Democrat who is brown, who has some type of African / Middle Eastern ancestry. I haven't even kept up on what this guy probably thinks about Zoran Mamdani, but I'm assuming it would probably be the same thing. And he was saying that this like kind of institution was coming in and infiltrating the United States and pushing policies that were more lenient towards Muslims, and that would eventually allow like Sharia law courts to form in the United States. And the whole thing kind of plays into this ISIS scare that happened, you know, in around 2014, 2015, of when the Islamic State took over the majority of Syria and Iraq and was massively expanding into his neighbors, and the entire world for a second kind of all coalitioned together to take out this fundamentalist group that was started because of how poor the conditions were in those countries. And it's really interesting because, like, there are Sharia law courts that exist. And this was one thing that, like, I talked about with him in the interview, was, like, these Sharia law courts exist, but, like, are they actually promoting Sharia law? And if you don't know what Sharia law is, I would say, like, it's like such a blanket term that's been thrown everywhere. But it's like, if you could imagine the most extreme doctrine of Christianity, it would be that in Islam, and it would be like a very enforceable thing that would have harsh punishments on it. But when you hear of Sharia law courts in the United Kingdom or in the United States, you look them up and they are real. But they're divorce courts. They're primarily used by women who are trying to get away from abusive husbands who are doing domestic assault and all this, or domestic abuse, and they're not actually used in criminal trials. These aren't actually making rules. They're literally divorce courts. Like, these are the lowest levels of courts possible, and I don't imagine that it's ever going to go past that. And they're not like it's the only option for, you know, Muslim women out there. They could go to regular divorce courts too. It's really like a... Well, one thing that kind of freaked me out, because like there was a lot of half-truths in what Tom Wallace was saying, of like the fact that, yeah, there's a lot of refugees coming. Yeah, that there's institutions that are being made by refugees that reflect the countries that they're from. People are going to do that, bro. That's called a melting pot, okay? When you're from countries, when you're from these like Western liberal countries who were the colonizers and, you know, they wiped out everything, it's like when you wipe out everything in the country, there are people are going to come to your country because you're the one that took all of the resources out of it and put it in your own country. So obviously they're going to come where their resources were.
I mean, okay, look at Indian populations in the UK as well. National dish tikka masala. Didn't reach the island until colonization. So.
Yep.
It's a very fair point.
And then, bro, all British people eat is like French fries and curry and beans. And like, that's basically it. Anyways, back to Tom Wallace though. It was really interesting just kind of seeing such a non-issue blown up into something huge. And that's kind of what like this whole Great Replacement Theory stuff is about. And that's what like a lot of, you know, when I worry about where media can be taken, that's what I'm worried about. Is because when someone listens to the Fortress of Faith, and they're hearing Tom Wallace say that Muslims are infiltrating the United States, and he'll say a bunch of crazy stuff like, yeah, Obama's a Muslim and all this, Ilhan Omar is a Muslim and all this stuff, and they're all supported by Al-Shabaab and ISIS, and all these terrorist organizations are secretly funding them. And then he won't say look it up to that part, but then when he gets to the Sharia law stuff, since he knows that news have published things about that, and he's even published things about that, he'll be like, look up what's happening in the UK with Sharia law courts. So then me, as a American, who hypothetically I don't know anything about Islam or Arab culture or anything, which I'm obviously a guest in those spaces even if I do know a lot, when you go and you look up Sharia law courts in the UK, you're like, holy shit, there's Sharia law courts here, dude. Oh my god, ISIS have infiltrated the UK. But like, that's not really what's happening.
It's their local communities abiding by their local culture, yeah, by the religion that they follow.
And you know what's so funny? Tom Wallace wouldn't even have an audience if anyone actually read the whole article. This is the real issue of what's happening right now. And this is not a Gen Z issue. This is not a millennial issue. This is not just a boomer issue or Gen X. okay? This is literally just a problem in America with literacy, or like a problem. People will read a headline and that's it for them, okay? They will read one paragraph and then like you lose 85% of readers. They just lose their attention spans and they click off the article. And they're like, yep, okay, this headline kind of sounded like what I was looking for. So there's my confirmation bias. I'm ready to get off. That's like the real problem of what is going on right now. I mean, no one wants to sit down and like read a book about an issue. Read especially like a scholarly academic book, bro. I mean, people just read bullshit of what they buy off Amazon. And then it's like, yeah, bro, of course you didn't get the right information. You didn't do any research on what are the most articulate, sophisticated books on like a topic like, let's say, I don't know, man.
Well, I do want to talk about this, but first I did have just a couple questions about Tom Wallace.
Okay.
So yeah, his show, Fortress of Faith, free speech or hate speech?
I mean, I would say the speech is hateful, but I would say that I think that he should be free to do it. And people should just beat him in the marketplace of ideas, because I think his idea is pretty shitty.
I mean, you said he has some sort of he does have a following in the South, and well, I've never heard of him, so he obviously can't reach that far.
Yeah, I mean, and like the audience that I think he has is, you know, mostly people that are in the evangelical Christian audience, which happens to usually be, you know, older than me and you. It's all like people who are like retired and all this stuff, man. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a demographic that has no real push.
And I guess I wanted to ask another question, but I think you answered it already. And it's, how does one fall into this evangelical anti-Muslim movement? And I think you answered that when you were talking about the Great Replacement Theory and how, you know, eventually this world is going to be run by Arabs. So it's up to the Christians to slander their name and spread hate about them, stuff like that.
I mean, I think people, that's like more of a question of how do people get radicalized. And I can tell you this, people get radicalized when the standard of living of them gets worse and they see people around them, and either they see the standard of living of them get better, or they just see a bunch of people come around, like new people entering the country around them, or the media is telling them that those people are living way, you know, higher quality lives. We ask ourselves right now, why is there this huge attack on migrants that's happening? It's because Fox News for the last 4 years and Tucker Carlson for the last 4 years has been telling everyone that migrants have been getting welfare and fake social security. I mean, I've had family members tell me this stuff, and like, it's just a lie. It's a lie. That's why it hasn't been looked into deeper. That's why there's not some huge investigation that's happening in social security and, you know, people are getting fired and all this stuff. They're just defunding it. They just used it as an excuse to defund social security and attack migrants. I think, honestly, radicalization happens due to people's standards of living. And when it gets worse, radicalization happens. And, dude, that's when people get super hyper-religious and all this stuff.
And it absolutely doesn't help when you see a lot of migrants move here who are very wealthy. Some at college last year, in my dorm, not my roommate, but in my dorm, there was this guy from Kuwait. His dad worked in tech, and he himself was Indian, but basically they got a big slice of Kuwaiti liquid natural gas money, so they had enough funds to come to the U.S.
I mean, that's what kind of goes into like the mentality of like a good immigrant versus a bad immigrant. Of like, not even Fox News is really attacking. Actually, I guess now they're attacking wealthy immigrant students or whatever, but I think that's more just like the intersectionality of being an immigrant and a student that they're mostly attacking, not the fact that, you know, they're well off. Because the whole ideology of what's happening right now is that there's too many people coming into the country and we don't have enough resources for them. Even though we have a population of 360 million people, we have a higher GDP than China, and somehow we're like almost in a worse standard of living than them. Even though they have a population that's over like 1.2 billion and we have 360 or 400 million people here.
It's up to 400 now.
Yeah, and it's like, well, maybe if we, you know, I don't want to get super class conscious here, but like,
maybe we should. I'm sorry. Just class consciousness. It's just something I want to emphasize to everybody I meet. No. You did that interview with Tom Wallace.
Okay.
When you were 17. That was when you, yes. When you were.
Yeah. I was around 17 or 18 during that time. Yes.
So I guess one of my biggest questions of the day is, what is your why into why do you want to do journalism? As well as, like, what got you into this field And, you know, why does it mean so much to you to the point where, you know, it's your college major?
I think, so with the whole idea of the Fortress of Faith and why I even took that story, I wasn't just taking it because it was a hate group and I thought it was provocative and you'd get the people going. I took it because when I looked at the Fortress of Faith and I was looking for articles, I saw like two blogs from like websites that had barely even been maintained and nothing else outside of that. There had been no detailed account of, you know, what the Fortress of Faith was and who this guy Tom Wallace, who's, you know, running a hate organization in the county, what he was about. And there's so many spaces where there's you know, institutions that are exploited to people, or there's hate organizations, there's, you know, things promoting violence. They often go unchecked in this marketplace of ideas. And I think that's where I want to come in, and that's what I want to do in my life, is I want to tackle these niche subjects.
And that's one of the most important things in journalism, is you cover the facts of a story and you cover all sides of a story. You know, it's a lot more than two. Essentially what I'm hearing is that you just want to contribute to this marketplace of ideas in a way that you think is truly free and rational. I can't say there's no agenda there, because there's always an agenda, but facts are facts, and it's worth looking at every side of the story, because there's so many marginalized groups and a lot of people who don't have the means to speak out. That's kind of long-winded, but does that sound about correct?
No, that sounds about correct. And I think, you know, kind of going back, I know we have other things we want to talk about. When we were talking about Charlie Kirk and we're talking about how there's only one idea allowed in the space, as much as, you know, I probably, you know, even though I'm trying to be so safe with what I say here. Yeah. And like, I think that people who, like, obviously there's been this entire like rewriting of his character, that he was just like this good Christian family man and all this stuff. But like, bro, like, this is the same guy who was writing, you know, George Floyd as just this criminal who is, you know, addicted to drugs and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, George Floyd had all of these flaws, but he also had a family, which is why I didn't think it was really funny when people made fun of George Floyd during that time. And I don't think I, like, find... I'm definitely not getting offended when people make fun of Charlie Kirk on social media and all this stuff.
He had such a big platform, so I understand why this is driving a lot of political conversation, just because he was one of those news influencers, if you will. And it only makes sense that for his biggest story, people are talking about him and his politics the most. But as you said, it's easy to get caught up in that and not remember that he has two children and a wife. He had a family. And
yeah, that's true.
Despite everything, he was still an individual, a human, just like the rest of us.
Yeah, he was a human. That is true. He was a human, and he decided for his whole life that he wanted to pander to mostly white Christian Americans about gang violence, about how black Americans are making the country worse and they're killing people. Muslim Americans, or Muslims, they didn't even think they were Americans, just Muslims are killing people in the country and making it worse. Immigrants are coming in, taking your money, raping your daughters, selling drugs to you, overdosing on fentanyl, just for him to get shot by a 22-year-old white guy from Utah who had a Republican family. But dude, it's really insane to like try to see a narrative switch happen here of like, this guy was obviously far right. I don't know if you saw this, but the White House actually just took off a statistic of, it was like a statistical analysis of how white supremacists and alt-right groups commit 75% of violent hate crimes in the United States of America. And it's like, it's an error 404 on the White House page. You can't find it anymore. Jesus. They removed it because people were quoting this after this most recent attack. Because now the whole topic shift with, you know, Antifa being listed as a terrorist organization. Is Donald Trump a idiot? Antifa is not an organization. That's the whole point of it, is that it's like decentralized. It's just people pull up in all black at a protest and they start, you know, they start protesting. I do want to acknowledge also that cops have been found to be completely complicit in those behaviors by dressing up undercover and literally breaking shit during the 2020 Black Lives Matter protests. And they would go there and they would break shit to raise elevation, to raise escalation.
Oh, to raise heat. Dude, I heard about that. That was a huge story.
Yes, and then they would try to corner off protesters and arrest them and bring them down. And this is like, dude, this is like secret police Gestapo stuff. I mean, I'm just going to be honest.
By definition, entrapment.
Yeah, 100%. And to like, dude, I mean, there's some type of unethical practice, I think, in doing honeypot activities like that, where authorities commit crimes in hopes of getting criminals to catch criminals. They commit crimes in order to catch criminals. Yeah, man, I think it's really crazy to like, if we went back 5 years ago and everyone was complaining about how like progressive and like politically correct media was back then, that we've now like completely flipped it. It was like, you know, I hate using this word so much, but like being woke in 2020, the same way that people thought that was like such a bad thing, that's like what I consider being alt-right in 2025 is. Like, it's just, you're so overly sensitive about everything. I don't even think people were that sensitive in 2020, but in 2025, people are freaking out about everything.
And I mean, you made a really good point about how the First Amendment only serves in the public institution and not private institutions, but there are still other vices for the public to do the exact same thing in limiting free speech. Like literally this July, when Big Beautiful Bill passed, that entailed a $1.1 billion cut to public media. A lot of it was money that was already appropriated to them in the future. NPR is getting $5 million cut this year and they're having to lay off dozens of workers. Dude, Whitehouse.gov, they were trying to explain why they're cutting public media, and essentially their take on it was calling places like NPR, PBS, corrosive, partisan, and first of all, you're the public government, so you decide what airs anyway. So if you think that it's corrosive and toxic, then that is entirely on the government responsible for that news organization. I guess where I'm going with this is that stuff that seems like free speech, there's hidden agendas and there's tactics behind it, which make it seem a lot more deceptive. Even with that presser statement by White House Gov, they weren't even trying to be deceiving. They were telling you outright lies to you. I don't think NPR personally is a corrosive or malicious platform, especially compared to the big corporate media monopolies we have today. Think New York Times, Washington Post. The Washington Post is literally owned by Jeff Bezos, one of the richest men in the world.
I 100% agree. My opinion here is that no one that's ever in the administration in the White House actually cares about free speech. I mean, at the end of the day, we can be like, oh yeah, the Biden administration only attacks, you know, the right wingers, and then Trump only attacks the left wingers. But like, they're really just attacking whoever is against the United States. I'm gonna be honest. I mean, like, let's just look at this from a perspective of not Americans and not such like a America-centric position of like, dude, even though free speech is the First Amendment up in here, like, I can't go and like make an oath to a terrorist organization. That would be exactly. Not allowed. That would be crazy. If I was spreading terrorist media, I would be removed. Okay, they remove that stuff from, you know, private institutions decide to remove it because the State Department makes it a terrorist organization and its media cannot be spread or it's illegal. And there's always ways for people to do that. And whether I agree if it's hate speech or if I disagree and say it's not hate speech, I'm kind of a, like, whatever goes is whatever goes guy. I think that everything should be protected. I don't even think that, like, private companies, unless you're actually calling for violence on people, I don't think private companies should be able to fire you. So, like,
Kirk
got killed.
Yes.
I don't even know how many days ago it was, but around like 10 days ago or something, he got killed. And I've noticed since then, there's been people who have been arrested on campuses and expelled for, you know, being very outspoken, to say the least,
and
on Charlie Kirk's death.
I've seen that too. And you would think like a university, a place of free speech, free learning, a place where people discover who they are and discover what there is in the world. You take away their free speech and what, were they expelled?
Yeah. People were arrested and expelled or detained and expelled. And it's like, it's really intense, man. I mean, there's been 12. This is an old article. I remember my grandpa was telling me about it. And then I actually read it too. There was 12 professors so far nationwide that had been removed for just being very outspoken on social media about Charlie Kirk. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very unfair, especially when, you know, they're not advocating for violence. Even if you're going to be like, oh, I don't really care. If you're going to be an asshole on Instagram, you're going to be like, oh, I don't really care that this person died. You have every right to do that, bro. You have every right to do that. I mean, and I think it was ridiculous when people were getting fired in 2020 for, like, what they were saying about Black Lives Matter protests, even though I disagree with them. And I thought that those were very important, instrumental protests that led to police reform. I also think that it's, like, ridiculous for people who, you know, say, like, their stupid opinions online to get punished for it. I don't think that, like, especially at a college, bro. Colleges have always been the institutions of, like, this is the marketplace of ideas. You're going to have, like, crazy communists here. You're going to have people who are, like, crazy, like, tech fascists who believe that, like, private companies should control everything in the world. And, like, that's beautiful to have those ideas mixed together. And to, like, people are supposed to get radicalized in college. That's why I don't understand how, like, everyone's acting like there's a huge, like, college problem of all these young kids are becoming communists and everything. And it's like, dude, I promise you, if you try to change something about it, you're going to make it 1,000 times worse.
And it's, you know, marketplace ideas. And most people don't fall on that spectrum. I'd say the vast majority of college students, they definitely fall somewhere in the middle. I wouldn't say the majority of them are socialists, but I'd say a lot of them are leaning towards democracy, at the very least, towards libertarianism. Or, you know, just, you know, freedom of government, freedom in your own democracy. And that's almost the worst part about what's happening in our universities now, is because these are state-run organizations that we've seen in the 2024 election. Trump promised cuts to federal spending at universities. He ended up passing the bill to do so. And where does most of that money go? It goes to FAFSA. It goes to students who really need them, like Pell Grant students, impoverished students who are really just trying to get a good education, who are trying to learn about the complicated world that we live in. Because the way American politics works, it's very divisive, polarizing. Those are the main two characteristics. And so many people get caught up in the culture war or the left-right war that they don't realize how similar a lot of us really are to each other. And
yeah, man.
Just the nuance in any specific policy issue. What's so scary now is that, you know, with Kirk's death, you see a lot more public and private officials getting fired, university students being expelled. And then recently, I saw you posted about this. It was the decision made on Mahmoud Khalil, mm-hmm. where for a while, things looked really bright for him, like he was going to get his freedom, or, you know, they suspended his trial. But now they're talking about sending him to Libya or Syria. First
yeah,
of all,
Libya or Syria.
Places he's not even from, because he is a Palestinian man. Who? Okay, so just a question. Was he? He's here legally, right? I assume that he was.
Yeah, he is here legally. Revoking his I don't think that he has any criminal history or anything. He's on a student visa here. Also, I know that it was an immigration judge that did make that ruling on him. I don't know yet if it's been blocked by a federal judge, because it can be blocked by a federal judge, but I think it's still the precedent of now Donald Trump slowly finding a way to connect, to consolidate these three branches of the legislative branch, the executive branch that he already has filled out with his own cabinet and put all of his puppets in, and then now the judicial branch, who has always historically been against him from 2016 to 2025, and he's slowly finding immigration lawyers that will back him. I guarantee over the next 4 years, he's going to try to fill as many federal judges as possible. Okay? I mean, mm-hmm. this guy is, like, doing complete, like, this guy's doing gerrymandering in Texas. He's, like, calling up Greg Abbott, and he's like, I need you to make me 5 new seats. 5 new Republican seats. Do it. And it's, like, it's a scary game that's going on right now. Sorry.
No, I didn't want to cut you off or anything, but what's even worse is, again, the polarization, the back and forth between both sides. Because you see Gavin Newsom in California trying to do the exact same thing, and it's incredibly exhausting. And, you know, California prides themselves on being democratic, being a blue state, having super strict standards. So in order to even redistrict, they first have to vote on it, which is going to cost taxpayers, your everyday Californian, millions of dollars, when they probably didn't want to redraw the districts in the first place. I know that if I lived in California, I would think that's a, you know, it's a stupid decision. I live in my state. I like where I am. And just because someone's enforcing playground tactics doesn't mean you have to do the same thing.
Yeah, and I think as, I guess we shift a little bit into politics here.
It sets a bad precedent.
It sets a terrible precedent. And I will say this. This is like a continuous pattern of, you know, this two-party system not really realizing what America wants, okay? And I can tell you this. It's not a war with Venezuela. It's not a bunch of new seats in California and Texas. It's not a genocide in Gaza. What we really want is a higher standard of living here, okay? I mean, it's ridiculous that we're the number one superpower in the world. You know, gimme, 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 take, take, take. That's what we've been doing. Give nothing out to no one. And we don't even give anything out to our own people. I don't know where the wealth is circulating in this country, but I can tell you this. It's not circulating to the over 300 million people that live here. I mean, it's ridiculous. I can't believe that Gavin Newsom is, like, running a campaign like this. I can't believe that Democrats haven't realized that none of the youth are going to want to back them if they don't denounce what's going on in Israel and they keep American taxpayer dollars in the United States of America, okay? Not funding wars in other places. We're not trying to build some resort for Donald Trump in Gaza. No one wants that. And I mean, it's disgusting.
And we're not the ones profiting from the military-industrial complex.
I have family members that consume, you know, everything. I mean, I'll tell you this. I have a lot of family down south who have kind of walked away from Fox, even though I would say they probably have more conservative opinions.
They're not classified as a news organization.
News organization. They've always been an entertainment org. But, like, now there's kind of this disdain, this disgust towards, like, news on TV. And not just news on TV, but just, like, institutional news of people view Fox News, MSNBC, CNN as kind of like how they view the Democrat and Republican Party. Of they're there to create chaos and to divide people and to just make it, I don't know, they're just here to make everyone upset so then people click on their damn articles and watch their damn shows. And I've like noticed a lot that the media consumption has slowly been transitioning to like either social media, what people read on Facebook or Instagram, or what you just see when you look up news on Google, and then it just shows you, you know, the hottest articles of the day, and then they'll click past CNN or Fox News, and they'll go to NPR or Al Jazeera or Reuters. Hopefully that's what they'll be doing. And it's crazy. I mean, podcasts have been something, you know, podcasts Absolutely. Have been something that's huge. It's
podcasting crazy. Is totally on the up and up. You made such a good point that, you know, people are making such a big transition away from mainstream news outlets, CNN, yeah. Reuters, Al Jazeera. And I guess before I get into that, I just want to point out something my dad said. It's like, you know, he himself is a Republican. He voted for Trump this election. Mm-hmm. But he also tells me, like, when he turns on CNN, he doesn't turn it on to see any particular side. He turns it on to see what's the, you know, what's going on the front lines. What's going on in Gaza? What's going on in the Congo? What are the most important news stories? So I think where some people get mixed up is just that, yeah, the news is scary and there is a lot of it, but that's exactly why we should consume mainstream news media, because they have the best access to these super far out places that need that sort of attention. Mm-hmm. But I want to move away from that because you brought up a really good point. People are listening to individual creators a lot more.
Yeah.
A Pew Research poll, I believe from last year, said that about 1 in 5 adults say that they regularly get news from news influencers.
I think negatively, I'm going to be honest. And I think it's because what a news influencer is has been like completely changed. So we're going to have to go platform to platform. So on Instagram, I would say Instagram's one of definitely the more safer ways of consuming social media news. I'm even like flinching at saying that. I feel like I'm going to have a professor that's going to, you know, punish me. But like,
I mean, if you're ranking turds, you got to put them somewhere.
That's what I'm saying, man. And so Instagram is probably pretty high up there. I know there's a lot of independent journalists on there that make their entire careers off of Instagram, and they get all of their money through that, and everything's connected through that, and then eventually they'll launch a website.
I would say it's kind of like bringing back zines, because a lot of them put them in like these super digestible articles that are still super informative. And
yeah,
there are still really good places.
I 100% agree. And like, I think it just matters on literally like if the person you're looking at is like coming with like a well-formatted story. When someone is just like posting on Twitter and just being like, dude, I just found something crazy in Hunter Biden's laptop, bro. Oh my God, it's crazy. There's like 1,000 pictures of exploitative material and all this stuff. And like people were saying that shit on Twitter for years and years and years and years. And I mean, we waited and waited and waited and nothing came of it. Okay. But then there's other great stories. Okay. Like what's been happening in Gaza, where you have all these independent journalists or even journalists with Al Jazeera, and they're posting every single time a bomb hits, will post it on Instagram, and you can see, like, you can literally see a genocide going on. I mean, it's now made it into a question of if these acts can even happen in silence. I almost said if they can even happen, but I mean, it's happening right now. So I guess institutions and governments could just ignore the media that's being produced, but the people can't at the end of the day. That's kind Absolutely. Of the main thing, is that the masses will not ignore mass communication. And I think that's why independent journalism is so important. I know we were talking about CNN earlier and like how it is important to consume mainstream media, because they will go to wherever a story is happening, but they also will format a story to whatever their, you know, their owners want them
their
to.
Corporate agenda.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Their corporate agenda. So, like, I remember, for a great example, when January 6th happened, Fox News, where they were stationed, their life...
That kind of makes things, news influencers, seem like a more positive addition on our world, just because, you know, obviously, you've basically painted both sides of the coin, where it's like, on one hand, news influencers also have their own internal biases. They can basically say whatever they want because it's a free platform and they can say whatever they want. But then there's also these independent journalists, or even these, like you said, like...
One thing that's been like helping me out is like, I've obviously been someone, you know, just like talking about my interest in life, I've been someone that's always into like liberation ideology, and especially like liberation theology, because I grew up very Christian in my life. Finding that kind of pathway with journalism was something that was really special for me. I mean, like, historically, you know, we call it the fourth estate, okay? It's been shaped by dominant groups, okay? It's been shaped by, like, nobles in the past. I mean, if we're gonna talk about, like, when the printing press just dropped, like, it was shaped by, you know, monarchs who didn't want some stories to come out, or they didn't even want, like, Bibles to be printed, because they didn't want people to become literate.
Shout out Johannes Gutenberg and Martin Luther.
Yeah, shout out to both of them. I only knew Martin Luther. I didn't know the other name.
Oh, that's the guy who invented it. It's actually really funny you bring that up, because I'm doing a Medium article about 8 functions of mass media, and I'm actually using the mass translation of the Bible.
What's like the most... Like, the printing press, I would argue, is like maybe one of the greatest innovations ever. And... obviously with like the creation of paper too being there, but printing press in recent memory, that is for sure there, because I think that was one of the origin creators of liberation ideology, was in the form of people having access to literacy, people being able to read, because that's like such a basic human function now that we think about it, that like everyone should have the right to read. Even though, you know, I'm gonna acknowledge that we live in a country, even though we have, you know, the number one GDP and the number one biggest military in the world.
The creation of the printing press, it actually, you know, that whole early modern period, mm-hmm. It brings up a really scary parallel to today, because you look at who is one of the biggest great powers in the early modern period. It was colonial Spain. It was Spain, Mexico, and the rest of their colonies in South America and elsewhere. And they largely restricted the printing press and free media in their country, which is one of the ways they were able to consolidate so much power for so long, because, you know, not many people could read, and if they could, no other vice or no other outlet or anything to teach them about the greater world around them other than just Spain. That relates to now, because a lot of people, they think just America. There's that one super silly. I don't know if it was a study or something. I don't know if it was Harvard. But they were like, point to Iran on a map.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, and it goes everywhere.
It's a pretty famous
post. It goes all over the map and everything. Yeah, man. I mean, at the end of the day, there's a reason on why we're only 79% literate in the United States. And why they're defunding, you know, let's go back to earlier when we're talking about them defunding PBS and them defunding NPR and all this. And it's because they want to make people in the country more stupid. I'm going to be honest, that's it. Okay, that's why AI is being thrown into everything now. And it's all slop, it's all garbage, bro. That's why we're moving on to, I will say this, I know I was glazing podcasts earlier, but like, podcasts, you know, you're coming there to hear people's new ideas and all that stuff, but you're rarely coming there to like hear a new, like, a podcast is never going to come out with a breaking news story.
Depending on what it is, you're just blindly listening to someone as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like the best one I've seen recently of like a podcast that actually tells a story that, you know, no one really knew was probably, funny enough, Tucker Carlson and Ted Cruz when
yes!
they did their interview.
And I saw those clips.
Yes, and Tucker was really pressing, but even then, we all knew that Ted Cruz was a Zionist. We just didn't know how stupid he was and that he can't quote the Bible and that he's... He doesn't know how many people live in Iran. I'm not going to like talk too bad about him, but it sounds like a lot of the things that he makes core principles of him being, you know, a politician in the United States, being a, you know, Christian American, being someone who's a staunch anti-communist. He was like, my dad's from Cuba, and, you know, he hated the communists. And he was like, well, it was actually Batista, who was the U.S. installed dictator who, you know, tortured my family. It wasn't Castro that tortured my family. It was the U.S. installed, quote-unquote, capitalist that did that. And he's like, but I hate communists. It's like, well, I'm starting... And I'm actually... It's so shameful that, you know, Tucker is completely bought out and he won't address something like that, because that would have been a great point to address. And all he's doing right now is he's like, anti-Israel, anti-Israel, anti-Israel. It's a cool point to take, and I agree with him. But yeah, man, I don't know. I think podcasts, a lot of times, that should not be where you get your main news from. I think that, like, you know, you ever seen the healthy plate of, you know, all the food you should be eating in a day?
Absolutely.
It has a million food fucking groups. Things. Dairy, half your plate's vegetables and like fruits. And it's like, what the hell is this? And then a little bit of carbs, a little bit of meat. That's how your media consumption should be.
The vegetable and the fruits, that's all reading.
Yeah.
Reading is just so, so important in today's world. And there's just so many people who don't realize the importance of the written word. Mm-hmm. Books are cheap. And if you have time, you have time. So yeah, it's definitely worthwhile picking up, like, reading some of the classics. George Orwell, 1984, Fahrenheit 451, Animal
Fahrenheit
Farm.
Fahrenheit 451, Animal Farm, yes. Thing, especially if we're talking about recommended books to read. I'm so into theology. One thing I found out from talking to a lot of Muslim friends I had was that they, not only do they read the Quran, just like how Christians, you know, basically only read the Bible, but a lot of Muslims do read the Bible too. And I thought that was something that was really interesting to me. And that was something that made me, when I was like, honestly, it was like when I was 14, I wanted to go out there and read the Quran. And that's exactly what I did. And dude, there's something so beautiful about like breaking out of like institutionally what you have to read and reading something that's like, quote unquote, against the rules. Whether, you know, I'm reading the Quran right here, or, you know, I got some other books here that I shouldn't be reading. The Conquest of Bread. Okay, crazy wild books. Excuse my cat in the background.
Lovely cat.
Thank you, man. But like, there's something so beautiful about breaking the rules. That's why I love college so much. That's why I love the marketplace of ideas, because you're just constantly breaking the rules over and over and over again. Because that's how this was supposed to be made, man. I mean, I'll read anything, honestly. I just read a book on Islamic fundamentalism, and I mean, it was beautiful, man. I've read communist literature. I've read Adam Smith, bro. Like, I've gone all over the place. I haven't, you know, read something like Mein Kampf or like...
I heard Mein Kampf wasn't very good anyway.
I heard it wasn't very good. I'm going to be honest. Yeah, I would assume it was probably not pretty good based on the author that wrote it.
Based on the kind of rhetoric?
Yeah, the rhetoric.
Meandering rhetoric.
Yeah, I think that's like one of those books where I'm okay with not checking it out.
I wanted to ask about Soleil, though. Like, I just, honestly, I want to know what you have coming up, or, like, Because I know that you are working on stuff right now. I know you're doing a lot of work in the Filipino community, especially locally in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll start out with Soleil first. So I think just like introducing what Soleil is. Soleil is a student-run newspaper, or not newspaper, my bad, student-run magazine at Western Washington University, and it's primarily BIPOC-centered. And it's the first magazine to do that on campus. And I think that it's really cool that, like, you know, I have colleagues on it. I'm not going to say their names, but the people who brought me into this space, they quickly made me understand that it was, you know, this magazine was like a form of liberation for me.
Absolutely.
And it was a form of creative liberation of, like, they weren't wanting, you know, they weren't running stuff like what the Western Front writes, which, by the way, the Western Front is the university-run paper that you have to go through 20 editors to, you know, publish anything, and people are constantly double-checking your work over and over and over.
It's only accessible through a class. And before you go on further, classes, I just want to explain what BIPOC stands for the listener. So it's a BIPOC-centric magazine. You know, it's about the culture. So BIPOC stands for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color.
Yes. And, like, bro, obviously, you know, you look at my complexion, definitely not the, you know, I'm not the most racially ambiguous person on the planet.
In the society we live in, race is borderline a spectrum at this point. Filipino-American, first and a half generation, my mom's straight from the islands, my dad's lived in Olympia all his life, so it's two very different lifestyles meeting up.
Yeah, bro, I mean, yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's just beautiful that, like, when I was there, and, like, I'm the creative writing team lead, and also, like, the main editor. And so I'm, like, not producing a lot of work. I'm only producing one piece for the entire magazine, and I'm just editing the rest. But throughout editing other people's works and, you know, kind of facilitating that writing team into going into the right path of, you know, creating what they wanted to create, it was so hands-off compared to any other magazine on campus. I mean, like, we really, the team's goal is to let people write what they want to write. And yeah, man, I mean, throughout, like, people weren't just writing from the perspective of their identity too.
Absolutely.
Like, that's not, even though it's a BIPOC-centered magazine, people were just writing shit that they wanted to write, and we were just having BIPOC writers on there, because BIPOC writers often get shadowed out.
Love what you guys are doing, and I love the message behind it that, you know, it's just people telling stories and not a lot of fluff behind it. You said you're the editor, and I get it. Editor has its duties, but I totally respect that, you know, it's a paper or it's a magazine run by students, for students.
Yeah.
And I just love the project.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's what's like, especially in a time right now when Western's cutting so many student institutions, like our student-run recycling centers, and, you know, they're slowly removing people from the ESC or moving them around and all this stuff.
The ESC is an ethnic student center, by the way.
Yes, yes, just for clarification. I think it's really important that students are now putting it into their own hands, and they're like, fine, if you're not going to pay for this, we're going to still keep these things up, but we're just going to do it out of our own pocket, and we have enough community support and enough organizing skills to be able to maintain and elevate these institutions that you originally put in front of us and then you took away. I think that's really important right now. And I think what Soleil is doing is, like, you know, not the actual by itself tip of the spear, but it's a part of the tip of the spear of the first response of what, you know, budget cuts to student institutions looks like. Of, we're not going to take this shit, dude. Like, this is what's up, bro. We're for the people, and we're going to actually make shit that people want to read, okay? And these people aren't always trying to just read about, like, what's happening at Western every week and all this stuff. People are trying to see, like, the cool creative projects that people do, and they want to hear people, like, uncensored, in, like, an uncensored format, just talk, okay? And they want to see these photo shoots that don't look like it's, you know, everything's only, like, in a punk rock style that's only appealing to, like, 85% of the campus or 80% of the campus or whatever the statistic is, bro, because, like, that's just so alienating.
If you liked the episode today, please check out the pod description. It has all the relevant information about our episode. Additionally, feel free to leave a rating. It is greatly appreciated. Whether you liked it or not, any rating, any feedback is greatly appreciated. And with that, I just want to say thank you. An artist is nothing without their following, without their audience. So it truly means the world to me that you even wanted to listen this long. So thank you so much, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.